This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now that the Israeli occupation army has realized it cannot succeed in defeating Palestinian resistance in Gaza, its frustration has been directed to Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Israeli military operations in the Jenin area have left at least 12 Palestinians dead and scores injured, with eyewitnesses describing dire conditions as emergency services struggle to operate. The three-day operation involving airstrikes, drones, bulldozers, and heavy troop deployment have targeted Jenin City and its refugee camp. Bulldozers destroyed the main road leading to Jenin Governmental Hospital, blocking its entrances with dirt mounds and making it nearly impossible to transport wounded residents. Together with our guests, we're going to try to make sense of a more senseless Israeli violence against Palestinians in occupied territories in this segment of your Spotlight. And now for our guests. Joining us is Ahmad Wahdan, human rights activist, joining us from Ramallah. And Mr. Asad Abushar, Palestinian academic and activist, joining us from Dublin. I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Hello to the both of you. Ms. Wahdan, we're going to start with you. Your initial take, ma'am, on this uptake of violence that we are seeing in Jenin. And we should also add for our viewers that since this new so-called Netanyahu coalition came to power about 24 months ago, every single day we have seen raids in the occupied West Bank. Every single day, and since October 7th onward, we've only seen an extreme escalation of that violence. Your initial thoughts, please.
Yes. Thanks for having me. And I mean, it's not only after their failure to defeat the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, the Israeli right-wing government, extremist government, Zionist, radicals who are running the show right now, and they've been acting in the West Bank before. And I can say that even during the past government, that these actions and measures, harsh measures in the West Bank were taking place. During the Al-Aqsa flood, there were confrontations, I would say, clashes between the resistance, the Palestinian resistance, in northern West Bank, especially in Jenin. And Jenin, the refugee camp, and as well the villages surrounding Jenin. Jenin becomes a focal point of the resistance, and the Israelis wanted to repress, suppress, and uproot even this resistance. They think that they don't want to repeat the same scenario as the one in Gaza, but it was going on in Jenin since the past 3 decades. We all remember what happened during these decades of confrontations and direct and clashes between the resistance and between the public, the Palestinians at large. In Jenin. Now the resistance is moving towards, has moved already towards Tulkarem, Qalqilia, Nablus. It was already there. Remember the lion den before? And it was like a silent war. The media is not covering, and the West, you know, the wild West doesn't give attention to what's going on in the West Bank. The military and the Zionist militias, settlers, are raging everywhere in the West Bank, even in our city where I am right now, in Al-Dire, where the PA, the Palestinian Authority's headquarters, like half a kilometer from my house here, they were daily raids to homes, daily arrests, daily confrontations with the settlers. We have two big settlers here, and the Israelis want to take more land and build more settlements. One of these settlements here called Bet Il, and it has the command. The headquarters of the Israeli army headquarters. It's just a kilometer from here, and they are running the show from here. Smotrich is running the show from here. And they were talking to explicitly that they want to annex the West Bank. This is one of their major aims, major goals, to annex the West Bank, not only the settlements, because before they were talking about annexing the settlements, but now they are annexing the West Bank, the whole West Bank, which is like 12 times the size of Gaza Strip. Of course, the situation here is different than Gaza, but we are still living in cantons. Cities are separated from one another, and cities are enclosed. Since the second day of the ceasefire, Ramallah Al-Bira district was closed from all entrances, north, south, east, and west. People cannot go out or come into Ramallah Al-Bira. And this is the same case in different cities and different villages. 800 what they call iron gates, which is a military checkpost, were in place, where separating cities from villages and cities from each other. So we are living in a battle theater here between settlers, the army, and resistance from one side and the people from the other side.
Thank you for your initial thoughts, Mr. Abu Shak. Thank you for your patience, sir. And I'm glad Ms. Watan mentioned the settlers, because when this so-called new coalition of Netanyahu's was put together back in January of 2023. Between January and October 7th, there were over 700 cases of settler violence, a 30-year record against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. From October 7th until the Gaza ceasefire, there were 3,000 incidents of settler violence left unchecked in the occupied West Bank, often under the cover of Israeli occupation force soldiers. Your thoughts on what Jenin residents are facing today and have been facing in the occupied West Bank, Palestinians there for quite some time now?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let me first refer to the name of this operation, which is called the Iron Wall. The Iron Wall, you see, that refers me to 100 years ago when Jabotinsky wrote that article, which is called the Iron Wall, calling for the ethnically cleansing of the Palestinians from Palestine and for bringing in settlers, Jewish settlers from over the world. That is to say, this process has been happening now for more than 100 years, and it was intensified from Nakba to the genocide from 1948, that is to say, up to this moment. I'm speaking, talking to you. So now the Israelis have one aim, whether it is the army. It's not actually an army. It is a terrorist organization. These are not fighters. These are terrorist murderers. These are killers. And of course, with them, the settlers who are brought from various walks of life from Europe, from the West, they have nothing to do with Palestine. They are Europeans from all over the world. They were sent to Palestine in order to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians, pump out the Palestinians, pump in more Jews. And this is why what they are doing now in Jenin, not only in Jenin, and in the West Bank and its entirety, they are, ravaging through the West Bank, killing, cutting of electricity in Jenin and other cities, cutting of water, like what they did in the genocide in Gaza. They are killing people. They are deporting people from their own homes. They are besieging. They are imposing curfews. They are arresting people, and they're killing, and they kill life. And this is the aim of this operation, is to force the Palestinians to leave Palestine, And this is why they build units for the settlers, thousands and thousands, not only in Jenin, but in Jerusalem, in Hebron, in Nablus, wherever. And they focus, why they focus on Palestinian refugee camps? Because the refugees symbolize the right of return, because the refugees were kicked out from Palestine, were deported by the force of arms, by the Zionist gangs, 1948. And they have always been calling for their right of return and compensation. They are dreaming. They are working, actually, for to achieve this goal in order to go back to their own country, to their own homes, which are occupied by settlers brought from all over the world. So this process, I think, is going to continue and to continue. And there could be no peace. There can be no peace in this part of the world as long as this apartheid, settler, Zionist, racist, apartheid state of Israel is there. This is, you see, the only solution. I was talking the other day in one of the demonstrations in Dublin, in Ireland. I told the whole world that the only solution is to dismantle this fascist, settler, Zionist, colonial state, because it is not only a threat to the Palestinians, it is a threat toward peace, toward justice, to human rights, to all the whole world. And as long as Israel is there, as long as this apartheid state of Israel is there, there can never, ever be peace. And then we shouldn't forget for a moment that this rogue state, this apartheid state, had always been supported by the West, by America, by Britain, by France, by Germany, by the Western European countries, by international colonialism, international imperialism.
in order, you know, to keep that part of the world under their control, to plant the resources, oil, gas, whatever, and to keep it divided, and to control that part of the world through hegemony and domination. So this Israel is not doing that against the Palestinian people. Israel, as a matter of fact, has a roadmap. Its roadmap is based on the number one ethnic cleanse of the Palestinian people, all the Palestinians to be kicked out. And we noticed that, you see, during the genocide in Gaza when they first said to Sinai or die. And then when Netanyahu went to the United Nations with his maps, you know, he wants Sinai back to take it from the Egyptians. He wants part of Syria, part of Lebanon, Iraq, even part of Turkey and Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. So that is to say, they have their own program. This expansionist program is not against the Palestinian people. It is against Egypt, in as much as it is against Jordan, against Saudi Arabia, against Turkey, even against Iran, okay, against everybody. And this is why the Palestinians shouldn't be left alone. Sure.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
There's Adel al-Bashar, a resident at the Jenin camp there. He said life is harder than you can imagine. The roads are blocked with dirt and stones. Ambulance cannot get there, nor can fire engines. My house is close by, but I can't get there because the army is nearby and there is a sniper. Anyone who gets too close is exposed to being shot, even doctors. For example, he said there are two doctors being treated in Amal Hospital right now. No one knows anything as the communication has been cut off. It is a really difficult situation. And Mr. Watan, earlier you mentioned the media coverage just is not there to cover these atrocities. International law has also eluded for years the Palestinian people. Israel's Western allies refuse to put the pressure on it to protect the civilian Palestinian population in the occupied West Bank. There are too many gross violations. And this level of collective punishment not to receive any global attention, isn't there?
Yeah, of course. No,
this is for Mrs. Watan. Hold on, Mr. Abu Shark. Let Mrs. Watan, I'll come right back to you. Go ahead, Mrs. Amal Watan.
We have to remember that this aggression against the West Bank and the people of the West Bank, and before that in Gaza, is not only executed or waged by this Zionist colonial apartheid entity. It is a project for the West. It's a project for the USA. This is a military base for the USA and its allies. So we can remember, for example, the war in Gaza. Israel would be defeated if the U.S. didn't step in and finance it and build this aerial support with all military equipments and financial support as well. $21 billion has been spent to support the Israeli war against Gaza. So in the West Bank, of course they know, the Americans know. I know for a fact, because I was involved in this. We were raising a case against land confiscation here in Al-Bireh, And we raised this case to the State Department, U.S. State Department, because the majority of the people who own land here carry dual passports, Palestinians and Americans. So the Americans know exactly what's going on in the West Bank. The Europeans, the EU, every country in the UK, of course, they know for sure what's going on. Why? Because they have their embassies here. They have their intelligence working with them. They have their own NGOs who are working on reports for them. So the data is there. The news is there. The atrocities, the violations of international law, the violations of human rights, it's all under their eyes. They can see it. They can read it. And the ICC that took this really daring resolution to summon Netanyahu and Gallant, this was because of the material, the sum of the material that was presented to the ICC. And this same material is being accumulated in the offices of the foreign ministers of the European Union and the State Department of the US. So the whole world, actually, now after Gaza, the whole world, the free people of the world, have seen these atrocities in their eyes, in their phones. Now, what we are seeing in Jenin, we were seeing it before, because social media now is the alternative media, because the mainstream media is not covering what it should be covering, because they want a silent war. And we were running a silent war here in the enduring a silent war in the West Bank during the Gaza genocidal war. So everything is open there. But the main goal here, they want to impose their own agenda, their own project. And this project is not only a Zionist project, it's a U.S. and allies Zionist project.
Thank you.
That's the base, and they don't want to lose it. It's a global war, and we are in the middle of this global war, because the Middle East
Please let me check in also with Mr. Abu Shark. Mr. Abu Shark, Mohammed Al-Amar, doctor there at Jenin Hospital, said the situation inside Jenin Hospital is like a prison. Patients and companions are prisoners inside. For example, patients with kidney failure who need to come to the hospital on a daily basis cannot go home after daily treatment. There is very little food. Medicine is about to run out. We have only given one dose of medicine for each person. These are reminiscent on the all the stories we got out of the besieged Gaza Strip over the last 15 months. If you remember, and to Ms. Watan's point, they want to annex. We've heard this rhetoric from this current Israeli cabinet. They have their eyes on annexing the entire West Bank. What do you see Israel's agenda being for the occupied West Bank moving forward? Even today, the occupation army gave evacuation orders for Jenin residents. When we saw evacuation orders issued in Gaza, afterwards, people had no homes to return to.
I think they are moving the genocide from Gaza to the West Bank, and they are going to commit massacres and genocidal acts in the West Bank, in as much as they did in the Gaza Strip, because you know this government, the government which is far right, religious, fanatic. It's not a government, actually. It's a gang. Those gangsters, you see, in Tel Aviv, are bent on the destruction and annihilation of the Palestinian people. And this is why they are destroying the infrastructure, hospitals, and the homes, and the schools, and roads, and they prevent water, they prevent medicine, they cut off electricity, food, they destroy homes. They are doing that because they have their program. Their program is to force the Palestinians leave Palestine. They wanted to evict the Palestinians by the force of arms, but the Palestinians will never ever leave Palestine, because this is our own country. But what encourages the Israelis are the inability and collusion of Arab and Muslim countries, especially our neighbors, because they didn't do anything. They have relations with Israel. they normalize relations with Israel. They send food, they send gas, they send petrol to Israel, and they have good diplomatic relations, political relations, economic relations, and they never dare
and let me
to
get
cut
this
relations with, right. with this rogue state of Israel, and they didn't come to the help of the Palestinians.
And let me...
Although the Israeli government say that they are going to move to Egypt, to Jordan, to Syria, to other Arab, to Jordan, to other Arab countries,
they
and they refuse
that.
Even to withdraw from southern Lebanon.
Thank you. And let me, Ms. Watan, I want you to allude to exactly what Mr. Abu Sharq just said, because these are echoed by Francesca Albanese just a day ago when she said that they're trying to, we have to stop them from exporting the Gaza genocide now that the ceasefire is in place since Sunday over to the occupied West Bank. What recourse or protection do Palestinians outside of resistance do they have to help them in this time of need against Israel's agenda in the occupied West Bank?
It was during the genocidal war against Gaza that this silent war in the West Bank was taking place, and the whole world, as I said, knows about it. And the only way for the Palestinians here is to resist in every mean that they have, as it has been in the north, as it has been in the south as well, as it has been in the middle. Of course, in front of weapons, in front of an equipped military and settlers organizations, what else would you have? Even demonstrations in front of these tanks and these military equipment cannot do nothing. But we do everything. We do demonstrate. We go to the entrance of Albire here, just 100 meters away from the main headquarters of the Israeli military, and we demonstrate. But nothing is happening. We have been sending letters to the State Department because they should protect, you know, the American citizens who are living here. But nothing is working with them. We have to still submit another case into the ICC to investigate the atrocities that has been going on for years in the West Bank, not only during these past years. And of course, we have a problem, another problem. The PA was waging a war against the resistance in Jenin refugee camp. And once the PA got out of the camp and the camp and Jenin, the Israelis went in.
Oh.
So also the PA is not doing what it should do. It has security forces.
Okay, we have
it has
to...
police forces.
I'm
but
sorry,
it's but not helping.
We have to go. Time has gotten the better of us. I want to thank you both for joining us on the program, and stay safe to both of you. Ms. Amal Watan, human rights activist, they're joining us from occupied Ramallah. Mr. Asad Abu Sharq, Palestinian and academic and activist, joining us from Dublin. And this brings us to the end of your spotlight. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to all of you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to Like Muhammad, where we are considering the virtues and the way of life of the last prophet and the way he behaved and the way he led the great life, which could be the great sample and role model for many of us Muslims. And once again, we want to discuss one of the great features that we found by search among the all great virtues and characteristics of our great prophet. In the Islamic context, based on the recent researches, the rate of the divorce is not as high as the other communities, which we need to be thankful for this, like alhamdulillah for this fact. But still, we need to know what is happening that we have those many problems. Are we like being patient? Are we behaving towards each other in the correct way? What happened that sometimes we see love fading away? Why Allah the Almighty has emphasized on marriage and disliked anyone remaining single. He also has outlined the rights of the husband and wife. Like if we are mindful of those rights, which Allah has defined them, and he also has defined the differences. And if we know them, there no problems will arise. Rather, everything will be like successful. We will lead a highly successful life. Considering our great Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, he never used to raise a voice at his wives. He was always gentle with them. He called them with sweet nicknames to make them feel special. The Prophet treated his family with like utmost respect, goodness, and kindness. Though at the time he had many problems, he had many enemies around. He had the battles to fight, he had people to counsel, he had many duties to do as the Prophet, the responsibility that a prophet is going to bear. But still, when he had some important matters related to the house and the other things, he would ask his wives for their opinions. And what do you think of this? What's your opinion? And how many of us could ask our wives, like, imagine you are the prophet. And then how, if we are in that situation, we are not for sure sharing any questions with the other people. Like, we will consider ourselves as the know-it-alls. But he still would go and ask their opinion. He would invest the precious time that he had on his family. The Prophet never raised a hand upon any one of his wives. Not only raising a hand, but also he never abused them. Like he never even said something hurtful. We have some narrations that mention he even never said oof to them. Like he never said, why didn't you do this? Why did you do something wrong? And he never, even when they made some mistakes, he would never just blame them and criticize them harshly. For sure, he was the great sample of the features that a great husband needed to have. A man once asked the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, what are the rights of the woman over her husband? And he said that he should feed her as he feeds himself and clothe her as he clothes himself. He should not strike her on the face nor disfigure her, and he should not abandon her except in the house. He was very kind, like our Prophet was so kind, and he never forgot the kindness. Even when his wife Khadija passed away, we all know how deep our Prophet was in sorrow and grief after he lost his wife. So even after the demise of Lady Khadija, he would stay careful of the people around, and he would not just go deep in sorrow and grief in a way that he would not behave well towards the people. The Prophet used to mention her very often. Whenever he just slaughtered the sheep, he would cut it into pieces and send them to the women friends of Lady Khadija. And they asked his wife once, how did the Prophet spend his time at home? And she would answer, he used to help us with the work we used to do. The fact that she said he used to shows that it was habitual. It was not just a one-off thing. He was always kind and lovely to his wives. Like, indeed, among the believers with the most complete faith, as the one who is the best in conduct and the most kind to his family. This is one hadith narrated from our great Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. He is valuing those people who are the most kind to their families as the people who are the true believers. And he's like giving this feature to those people who claim to be Muslims. The Prophet's wife, Aisha, narrated that one time some of his companions played with the sticks in the mosque and she wanted to watch. So he put his hands for her to lean her head on and watch. And she said, I intended to keep watching for longer and longer just to see when he will get bored and tired. When will he get tired and just remove his hand and ask me to come down? And she said, actually, I lost interest in watching and he was still there for me. He is the sample of a husband who is like having the most sacrifice that we can imagine in a person. He took the time to play games with his family. Like, we have many narrations of the way he would play with his grandchildren, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And he would like literally be the feature, like the family feature that we can imagine. The great father, let's say, of Lady Fatima, the great grandfather of Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And of course and foremost, he was the great husband. He used to laugh with his wives. He used to say such good words. He used to joke with his family. He used to seat his family down and talk to them and tell them stories, narrate the helpful narrations and instructions of Islam. And he spent time with his family. And this is really important, that he spent time with his family even though he had many responsibilities. But still, the environment in his home was loving and kind. Our great Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam used to praise his wives, especially with others. He has used to say so many beautiful things about his wives. He treated them with like love and romance. The best love story about the history has ever been known to be the story of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and his wife. He used to watch his wife eat from the corner of his eyes in such a way that it would create a feeling of romance, in a way that he was just being proud of having her around. Let's put it in today's word, he could be proud of the feature of the position that he had, but still he was trying to let go of all the feelings that he might have as a normal human being. And he used to hold his hands and let them like take a step on his hand on the way that they wanted to go on the camel. He would declare his love for his wives. I mean, what is shining here is that he would show the way that he was proud of having his wives around him. He loved his wives and he used to declare it to them very often. Well, this was all for today's episode of Like Muhammad. Until another episode, I wish you great lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend of Allah, ya Rasulullah, Rasulullah.
When the genocidal army came to lay the people low, to spirit them away from lands their fate had always known, the leaders of the free world turned away their greedy eyes to protect the settler colony and spread outrageous lies. Oh, raise your voice for humanity. Raise your voice to the indignity. Raise your voice for the thousands who've been slain. We sing the name for freedom yet to still be attained. When the young folk made a stand to fight for all the human race, our leaders called them evil as they blinded them with mace. Yet stronger still, they cried out loud for freedom to ring true. Oh, an end to the apartheid is so long overdue. Oh, raise your voice for humanity. Raise your voice to the indignity. Raise your voice for the thousands who've been slain.
We sing the name for freedom, yet to still be ordained. Now we see the rich folks smiling at the galas and soirees, as the children of Gaza, their mangled bodies laid, their hungry eyes and blood-soaked as still left out in the shade of the dimly shining eagle-lining pompous parade. Oh, raise your voice for humanity. We sing the names for freedom yet to still be attained. To all the gallant heroes who boycott and divest, who stand against an occupying army's evil zest, I say to you, dear comrades, stay strong until the end. Free Palestine forever is the message we will send. Oh, raise your voice for humanity. Sing the names for freedom yet to still be attained. Raise your voice for humanity. Raise your voice to the indignity. Raise your voice for the thousands who've been slain. We sing the names for freedom yet to still be attained.
In the limelight.
Experts have warned that America's withdrawal from the World Health Organization could seriously weaken the world's defenses against diseases, as it would put a massive dent in the World Health Organization's resources. So why does Donald Trump want to leave the World Health Organization? We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Sky News has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump has signed an order to remove the United States from the World Health Organization, citing its perceived mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic and unfair payments as a driving force. President Trump singled out the World Health Organization executive order as a big one, and he signed it along 100-plus others upon his return to the White House on Monday, 20th of January. But why has the Trump administration moved to leave the World Health Organization, and what could be the consequences of this move? Donald Trump's order calls for pausing the future transfer of U.S. government funds to the World Health Organization, recalling and reassigning federal personnel and contractors working with the World Health Organization, and calls on officials to identify credible and transparent United States and international partners to assume necessary activities previously undertaken by the World Health Organization. Before the United States can actually leave the World Health Organization, which it joined in back in 1948, the move has to get approval from Congress, and the United States has to meet its financial obligations to the WHO for the current fiscal year. The United States also has to see out a one-year notice period before leaving. The executive order also states that the government will review, rescind, and replace the Biden administration's 2024 U.S. global health security strategy as soon as practicable, which was described by the former government as a science-based approach to strengthening global health security. But what reasons has Donald Trump given for wanting to leave the WHO? Trump said at the signing ceremony, "World Health Organization ripped us off. Everybody rips off the United States. It's not going to happen anymore." The new U.S. government's grievances over payments took up a significant portion of the executive order itself, with the opening section claiming WHO continues to demand unfairly onerous payments from the United States, far out of proportion with other countries' assessed payments. China, with a population of 1.4 billion, has 300% of the population of the United States, yet contributes nearly 90% less to the World Health Organization. But before the mention of money comes a hefty criticism of the World Health Organization's handling of the COVID pandemic and other global health crises, with the executive order claiming it failed to adopt urgently needed reforms and showed an inability to demonstrate independence from the inappropriate political influence of World Health Organization member states. Donald Trump initially tried to leave the World Health Organization during his first term in office. In July of 2020, he officially notified United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres the United States was planning to pull out of the World Health Organization and suspended funding to the agency after claiming it had been colluding with China to hide the extent of the coronavirus spread in the early days of the pandemic. Trump claimed WHO aided China in efforts to mislead the world about the origins of the coronavirus pandemic. The Democratic successor to Donald Trump, Joe Biden, reversed Trump's decision to leave the WHO on his first day in office in 2021. But Donald Trump made no secret of his intention to pick up where he left off if he got a second term in office. At a campaign rally last September, Donald Trump said he would take on the corruption at the World Health Organization and other public health institutions, he said, were dominated by corporate power and by China. The World Health Organization has always denied Donald Trump's allegations over colluding with China and has maintained it continues to press Beijing to share data to determine whether COVID emerged from human contact with infected animals or due to research into similar viruses in a domestic laboratory. Experts have warned that a cutoff of funding could weaken the world's defenses against dangerous new outbreaks capable of triggering pandemics, because the United States has historically been among the biggest donors of the World Health Organization and has provided it with hundreds of staffers with specialized public health expertise. The United States has given the World Health Organization about $160 million to $815 million every year for the past decades, contributing to its yearly budget of about $2 to $3 billion. Because of this, experts say losing America's support could cripple numerous global health initiatives, including the effort to eradicate polio, maternal and child health programs worldwide, and research to identify new viral threats. The Reuters news agency has also covered this same story and tells us more. President Donald Trump is pulling the United States out of the World Health Organization, raising concerns about the UN agency's ability to fight diseases and respond to emergencies around the globe without its biggest funder. The US contributes about 18% of funding for the World Health Organization, which is struggling to raise cash for health emergencies from Gaza to Ukraine. The agency's two-year budget for 2024-2025 was $6.8 billion. In that period, the U.S. financed 75% of World Health Organization's program for HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases and over half of contributions to combat tuberculosis, the agency's data has shown. The U.S. is the world's top global health donor by far, giving $15.8 billion in 2022 according to Donor Tracker, a platform tracking development funding. Donald Trump is also skeptical about World Health Organization-led negotiations for a post-COVID pandemic agreement aimed at improving global solidarity when the next health threat strikes. Donald Trump's ally, technology billionaire Elon Musk, has said nations should not cede authority to the World Health Organization. The United States will cease negotiations on the treaty while its withdrawal proceeds. Donald Trump's order also said the U.S. staff and contractors working with the World Health Organization would be recalled and reassigned. The United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has worked closely with the World Health Organization, seconding about 30 staff to Geneva and collaborating on research and disease outbreaks. There are also a number of World Health Organization collaborating centers in America. The United States, like other World Health Organization member states, is part of a global influenza surveillance network supervised by the WHO. Among other things, the group advises on composition of the annual seasonal flu vaccine. Beyond its work with the World Health Organization, the United States also funds many other global health programs. The United States is a major funder in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Much of that comes from PEPFAR, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief.
Thank you.